Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
When Ryan's is when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team. That makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way. Take the mic.
Hello, Way. Hey, John, and hello, everybody joining us on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel. You have found us. You are here. But man, we just changed the world over the last 22 minutes. Did you miss it?
No, not me. I was here talking to you.
It was pretty riveting, wasn't it?
I enjoyed it. I'm sensing some sarcasm.
I'm not being sarcastic. No, I have to work on that. I do kind of default to sarcasm, and I think it throws you a lot of times.
You gave us a great background on the career of Robbie Lawler, as he was announced today for the UFC Hall of Fame a second time.
That's right. Yeah. Two-time Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Obviously, some riveting, perhaps, analysis of a newly announced matchup between Butterbean and Minoru Suzuki to take place WrestleMania weekend.
That's right. We are also talking about where the WWE Hall of Fame is going to be taking place. It's going to be a very late night if you're going to be taking in the Hall of Fame, especially if you're on the East Coast, because, yes, you will have SmackDown ending at 11 Eastern and then the Hall of Fame starting at 1 a.m. Don't know if I'm going to be catching the Hall of Fame this year, but I'm sure it'll be fun. All right. All of that can be found. You can go XL at postwrestlingcafe.com. That gives you live access as soon as Raw ends every Monday. Flip us on and we're talking. We just keep talking and talking and talking. What better way to hear us than live? So you can just take in all of this in its unfiltered form.
And tomorrow, the latest edition of Pollock and Ting Talk will be recorded and coming out. So I'm going to catch John up about his entire vacation and everything else.
You do have to catch me up on everything I missed.
Maybe I shall. Yeah. So that's postwrestlingcafe.com. Thank you, everybody who signed up. But speaking of which, John, you've been away for only a week, but it really feels like you've been away for much longer because a lot has happened in that time. And we kind of teased it on Sunday, but I'm sure the entire audience would like your reaction to Elimination Chamber.
Well, I thought that Bianca Belair was a great choice to win the Chamber match. I thought Elimination Chamber was an excellent show. I thought just tremendous show pretty much from start to finish. And I joke, but that women's chamber match like really impressed me. I went in. It was usually these matches are structured well, and then it's left to kind of where the execution lies. And I mean, it wasn't going to be the most important match going in to the show, but I thought the women did a tremendous job. I thought Liv Morgan was I thought she really shined in that match, and the angle with Jade Cargill. I mean, I feel like I'm probably just hitting the greatest hits for many people that have heard their analysis from many people by this point. But I love the reaction by Liv Morgan as Jade was coming out, but even more so was Bianca in the pod, having to react to this. Like, this was some like Martin Scorsese stuff in terms of just like having to watch your loved one murdered in front of you and you're left powerless. I just thought it was a great angle and payoff to it. And yeah, we'll talk about it a bit more with that particular story, because it does extend onto Raw tonight. The Owens and Zayn match, I think that is high on match of the year lists. Might have been a little clouded after Revolution, because this is going to be, like every year, a very competitive race for match of the year. But coming out of that, my initial thought was that's probably right under Kenny Omega and Gabe Kidd for me. I thought just for that type of hardcore match, I thought it was excellent that the two had, and that was very strong. And then that takes us the men's Elimination Chamber match, which of course leads to the big John Cena. John Cena was he turned heel way at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I mean, it was a fantastic angle. I have to say that in my very heavy criticism of The Rock's big segment with Cody Rhodes, my main thought was the fact that I completely discounted that they would go that direction with John Cena. And going that way, like when you look at it and like they're in a position right now, like now is the time that you can do this with John Cena. You are not reliant on John Cena for any reason to have to stay as a babyface, and WWE is in a position that they can go this direction. Like, you are not going to see New Japan turn Hiroshi Tanahashi this year before he retires. Like, that would be very bad business for them. This is not going to result in any bad business for WWE. In fact, this is going to probably, I mean, just the fallout to it, the amount of buzz this got outside of wrestling, like, did you expect it to be that big as it was in the days coming out? Like, I thought this would be pretty big for wrestling fans. I didn't necessarily expect this to be such a big deal on like your ESPNs and the digital numbers they did for this. It exceeded what I thought. And I thought this would be big when they shot the angle, how well it was done.
I didn't, certainly not. No, I didn't expect the Daily Show to do their Monday coverage with Jon Stewart completely based around this.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of interesting stuff that will begin next week of just, you know, basic stuff like the look he like goes with. Is it just going to be a similar look? Does he change up the music? Does he do anything with his hair? I mean, there's just all the stuff you can play with that. I'm sure a John Cena has had a lot of these ideas that have probably just been parked for years of, if I ever were to do this. And I guess it'll be very interesting. These European crowds, especially, I would have no concern about him. Like, this audience knows what their job is to boo John Cena. And I think that's what the audience wants to do in this role. Like, it's going to be a fun, entertaining aspect of the show to finally, like, you're welcoming these boos. I'm interested with some of these European crowds, if they are similar. Like, this is, we've got to remember all these stops, this is John Cena's last stop in all of these places. And we even got some of that tonight, which we did get the dueling chance at a certain point during the Cody promo. So I don't think it's as just like snap your fingers and it's going to be hatred of John Cena. But this is also a WWE audience. They very much know what their role is, and that they are, that John Cena is the heel, we are to boo this guy here. But it's also like this real farewell that they are doing. And it's going to be, for some of these fans, the first time they're seeing a John Cena in like some of these places in the world, and also the last time.
I think it's probably why it was so difficult for me to imagine a John Cena heel turn concurrent with the warm and fuzzy feeling of seeing him for the last time. I do think that might be a struggle that they'll have to meet, especially when we're heading towards WrestleMania and we're facing the prospect of him actually breaking a major, depending on who you ask, you know, a record held by Ric Flair. How are they going to get the audience to boo somebody, you know, about to do something like that? I'm curious to see.
But I think everyone is so interested in how they go about this direction. And you could certainly argue of, like, I thought Cena and Cody just going like the babyface direction, I thought that was a really, they're playing like with fixed dice. It's like, whatever way we had gone here, this WrestleMania show was going to be massive. It was going to be the biggest show in its history. If you're looking just as for entertainment value, what is the most engaging for you, the fan? Is it going this? You would have to say, like, John Cena as a heel, that's going to grab a lot of added interest for people because it's John Cena in pretty much new skin for the first time in over two decades. So, I mean, I have to totally, like, admit that, like, I definitely jumped the gun thinking this would not be an effective way to go. And the John Cena heel turn was kind of not in my thought process. So that definitely was great angle. And next week really starts the build for this and seeing how some of these audiences react and what we see from John Cena. Cause I think John Cena is going to be really primed for this heel run, much like, you know, for the second year in a row, taking like a super established babyface star like The Rock last year and flipping things to go the heel direction while you do have that solid babyface in Cody Rhodes as the foil. So there you have it. You want to go through last week's Raw first and then we'll move on to this week's. No, we are going to be also do want to mention that in addition to talk later on this week, I'm going to have a chat with Scott D'Amore to talk about this weekend's Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling shows that are happening in Windsor, Ontario. Also, we are going to be re-releasing our interview we did back on the Christmas show with Mauro Ranallo, who is going to be calling the Maple Leaf shows this coming weekend and was also one of the many guests at Revolution. Although, you know, I would have liked to have heard Mauro maybe instead of Young Gravy preview some of these matches.
That's a good point. Yeah, I don't know if he was considered or not. Who knows?
Anyway, so that's going to be dropping this week. Lots of stuff up on the site, so you can check out the schedule. And Daredevil Born Again reviews continuing on the cafe with Rich Fan and WH Park, which was my listening accompaniment on my flight home last week. Listening actually, I watched the episodes on the flight, and then after I had landed, I listened to their review.
I watched the first episode today.
Man, those first 20 minutes.
What?
Those first 20 minutes.
What about the first 20 minutes?
Of Daredevil?
Oh, got it. Yeah, spoiler. Okay, so we won't talk about it. But yeah, it was pretty effective. A big plot point, yes.
Okay, we'll talk about this in a year. On to Raw we go from Madison Square Garden. WrestleTick's last number was 18,060. Michael Cole mentioning 19,000, over 19,000. Then it grew to over 20,000 by the end of the night. Cody would have a disputed number, and somewhere along the way, it was a giant number for WWE and probably a multi-million dollar gate that they did. Probably one of the biggest gates in Raw's history when all is said and done, if we get a gate figure for this huge event for the company. And we are starting off with Jey Uso and Grayson Waller. As Jey Uso, Waller and Theory have been assigned holding pattern duty for Jey Uso. And Jey, early on, gets his shoulder sent into the post, but then responds, hitting a suicide dive. Theory is getting involved constantly. After the break, Waller stops a dive by snapping Jay's neck on the rope, hits the rolling flatliner, but Jay recovers, lands a super kick, hits one to Theory, and spears Waller in 9 minutes and 10 seconds. So he has gotten Grayson Waller out of the way. He's going to fly all the way to Brussels next Monday to get Austin Theory out of the way. But before he can leave for Brussels, he is attacked by both Theory and Waller, who join in. Theory tries to fight them off when Gunther appears and puts Jay to sleep with a rear naked choke.
Yeah, so he got him again. Gunther did. The opening match I thought was fine. Honestly, nothing that special about it, as I don't know if you would have had any other expectations for Jey Uso versus, Grayson Waller. They have been like pretty sparing in their usage of the Jey Uso entrance, and they saved it for a big arena like they did tonight with MSG. So I do continue to think like the matches are just kind of they're fine, but like it's the entrance and the connection to the crowd. And I would say now the promos that actually make Jey Uso stand out as a talent. I do think the matches themselves probably still need a bit more. And we'll see, you know, on the night of with Gunther, he probably stands the best chance of like having maybe one of the stronger matches of his entire career. So I'm curious to see Jay getting choked out again, or at least getting bested by Gunther again. I'm sure it'll lead to another big promo where he talks himself up. So we'll wait for that. But otherwise, we're definitely in a stage in this feud right now where it really feels like we are just kind of filling the time between the Rumble and WrestleMania. I'm sure in the weeks, like in the very 2-3 weeks leading to Mania, we might get some actual substantive, like, segments between the two, but all the stuff with Alpha Academy and the A-Town Down Under, I don't even think you'll see recapped at all in the video package leading to the match.
You don't see Alpha Academy hoisting up Jay as the closing shot of WrestleMania Night 1?
I mean, sure, that could be, yeah.
But, well, maybe like a former teammate of Otis, maybe Jay has to go discover the dark arts of submission defense.
Yes.
He's in New York. Maybe before he leaves for Europe, he goes and finds John Donaher.
Oh, okay. Yes, yes. Get his own gi. Or rash guard, I should say. Yeah.
Video package on Punk and Rollins. They did a really great job of building up this steel cage match. They incorporated clips from past cage matches in the history of Madison Square Garden, including the first time they had a cage match at the Garden with Bruno Sammartino and Ivan Koloff, one of their less famous matches, but that was in 1975 during Bruno's second reign. They showed Randy Savage with Ted DiBiase, multiple clips throughout the night, and I like that kind of addition to making this feel like bigger than just your usual TV main event of the week. Ludwig Kaiser does a video addressing Penta, and your lack of fear shows your ignorance, as fear could have been your ally to run far away, but there's no turning back anymore. No one will remember your name after Ludwig Kaiser is done with you, and then you will know fear.
I didn't see this. This was during the commercial.
Oh, this was some poetry from Ludwig Kaiser. And Penta's response was, "We are going to have a no-holds-barred match next week." And that is, in fact, what they are having. Alpha Academy checked in on Jay in the trainer's room. That was our lone appearance by Alpha Academy. Logan Paul comes out to gigantic heat from the New York crowd. And, you know, Hangman Page is getting ready for the spring season of gardening. But the first sign that winter is over was this plant that was in the front row wearing an I Hate Logan Paul shirt that Logan just casually ripped off this guy who had the acting chops of a stick and proceeded to go into the ring and had to cut his promo amidst all of these boos. He does not associate with guys like AJ Styles. He compares himself to Rock and John Cena, men who have transcended this business. And he was shocked that Cody would reject The Rock's offer. Cena finally learned that nice guys finish last and announces his soul is for sale, and then shouts out Andrew Schultz, the comedian who is in the front row, and hands him a microphone. And Andrew Schultz, only the second biggest celebrity in his row, with a grinning Cheshire cat, Mark Shapiro, two seats down, knowing the inflationary effects of what this seat commands, and just ogling those logos on his mat. And Schultz states that he is here for the cage match, and no one is here to see Logan Paul. This isn't Cleveland. This is a real city, and they like real wrestlers. And Andrew Schultz, God damn it, he wants to see AJ Styles. So Logan tosses Schultz into the ring and goes to suplex him when AJ comes to the rescue of Andrew Schultz. This is what this show has come to, way. And he lands the phenomenal forearm, calls Logan back to the ring, but Logan cowers to the back, and AJ and Andrew Schultz share an emotional hug, and then Pat McAfee shouts out, "Mark Shapiro's here!" And what a wonderful segment this was. I can only hope that this is our tag match for WrestleMania. Do you think AJ Styles has ever heard of Andrew Schultz before tonight?
Didn't Schultz interview Trump?
Yes, so maybe.
He probably listened to that podcast, maybe. Yeah. I thought it was like another just sort of like at this point pretty typical example of like a TKO era WWE integration of a celebrity that's in their crowd. Certainly when it comes to like a New York market and MSG, you would expect something like this. I guess I didn't necessarily expect Andrew Schultz to be like the New York representative in terms of celebrity on the show, but he does have the Netflix special that's out right now, and that's
this guy's also like filled Madison Square Garden. Like he's a massive comedian. So I mean, yeah. There's a lot of appeal to him. He's no Andrew Devine, but.
Oh, man. Yeah. Some people might compare the two celebrity integrations from the buy-in to this. And first of all, I think the Costco guys are an excellent sort of example of great celebrity integration on maybe a higher level than even what you see here. But when it just comes to like involving somebody in the crowd, I think there are appropriate levels of how much you involve them. Getting the dudes from the Righteous Gemstones to choke slam one of your active wrestlers, to me, completely overstepped those bounds. But having Andrew Schultz come in to just like trash talk a Logan Paul, not get physically involved, but to sort of like pave the way for an AJ Styles to save him. I mean, I thought that was perfectly fine integration. You know, this is
and the crowd were going nuts for this too, like for the AJ involvement and everything. Like the audience really got into this, and the heat for Logan was like really a great scene setter too.
It was great. And I think it's important to me to note like how different we are in terms of celebrity involvement now compared to like, I don't know, 15 years ago with like the guest GM era, where it feels like most of these celebrities had nothing, like were obligated to be here, didn't really want anything to do with wrestling, put no effort into like how much they were doing, you know, on the actual shows. This now at this point actually feels like these guys might be having fun and might be like not so concerned about like being seen on the wrestling show, for instance. In fact, they seem to be embracing it.
Yeah. I mean, you imagine a 3-hour Raw hosted by Young Gravy.
Oh boy. Yes. We'll see. But here, like, this was pretty crazy. Okay. Between Andrew Schultz, Logan Paul, and Pat McAfee, like, you had three of the biggest voices on the podcast space here, all in this one segment.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Yeah, and then we go to a big video on TKO taking over boxing with Turki Alashik featured in this video. And then we go to a seamless cut to Freddie Roach with Callum Walsh, who is probably going to be one of the big TKO featured boxers, would be my thought, as they promote his fight coming up this Saturday at the theater at MSG. Oh, but Femi was also shown in the crowd, and that takes us to the tornado tag, New Day against Rey Mysterio and Dragon Lee. They take it to the floor, and New Day put a table back under the ring after LWO brings it out. So tons of heat for them. LWO take over. They bring the table back out, and Dragon Lee is caught by New Day and slammed on the floor. And we go to break as Kofi knocks Pat McAfee's coffee down onto the floor. Now, did you catch any of this commercial break?
No, I watch on a delay, so they skip actually all these commercials.
Yeah, sometimes it's hit and miss if I catch up or I'm behind. But this one I was up to date on. Mm-hmm. I promise you that Pat McAfee was legitimately pissed that here he is, not even an hour into the show, and his coffee gets knocked over. First of all, got knocked over all over his seat, so he couldn't sit for the rest of the show. And he was talking about how expensive this coffee was, and that I can sympathize. Like, if I had a coffee and I'm kind of working on it for, I'm pacing it for the length of this show, and in the first 45 minutes, someone just for heel heat knocks it over. He was like very annoyed at this and kept bringing it up. And he finally calls New Day. These guys are assholes. And they did it right in front of Macaulay Culkin here. So he
was he more mad about this or the anthem getting booed?
Pretty close. This was pretty close. He might have to shake hands with the coffee makers on his show tomorrow night. Lee then Dragon Lee hits a double stomp onto Woods, who's in the Tree of Woe, and then a flying Rana sends Woods off the apron through a table. Crowd is into this. Kingston avoids the 619, but then on a second attempt, Ray hits it. Frog splash, but the knees are lifted by Kingston, and Lee hits Kingston with a Tope Con Hero when a masked man appears in a red, white, and blue mask, hits Dragon Lee with a Rana, and then lifts up Ray for this delayed German, and it reads American made on the mask as security goes after this mystery man who leaves through the crowd, and then New Day pin Ray with their finisher in 11 minutes and 8 seconds. More on this masked individual as we are now that the Jade Cargill attacker has been revealed. Now we have our next 2-month mystery before the revelation of this identity.
Maybe the answer is not what we all think. So it could be Aleister Black.
That's who I thought this was. I thought this could be Miro.
Could be really anybody, yeah. Good match, good star power here for an MSG action that I think really got this crowd once they got to those near falls. Whatever this thing was with the Gable potentially, I thought it worked out well. The fact that the Rana did not look good at all, I think kind of works for the gimmick. You know, here's somebody who like thinks he's a master of the dark lucha arts now, and his lucha actually looks awful. So I kind of find that.
He also met the guy, he paid off the guy last week. So how much training did he do? It took him weeks to find this man and pay him off.
He did no training. He just got the mask. Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he might have gotten a luchador. You know,
why would you fly all the way to Mexico just for that? Like, I could have brought him back one.
This was a custom made mask.
Could have ordered this on High Spots or something. Finn Balor is with Carlito complaining about Braun Breaker when the rest of Judgment Day walk in, and Dominic notes that he has gotten an Intercontinental title match for Balor next week if he approves it with Adam Pearce. So Balor is stunned by this, hugs Dominic, and goes to make it official with Pearce. Liv doesn't know why Dom didn't take the match for himself, but Dom says he believes in Finn. And what a heartwarming moment this was.
I mean, it certainly is teasing Dom, setting up some sort of trap, betraying Finn Balor. I feel that was like fairly evident. So I'm thinking we might get that new member sooner than later, replacing Finn.
Any thoughts, Wei? Any further thoughts on who it could be? The new member.
No, honestly, no.
Okay. More celebrity involvement. We had Peter Rosenberg, Fabulous. After he missed WrestleMania that one year.
Finally made it.
And now this time Cena didn't show up.
These guys
are just ships that cross and miss each other.
One day
in the night.
We will get that rap battle. Yeah.
And then the brother of Academy Award winner Kieran Culkin, Macaulay, is showing with another one of his brothers.
I feel like Macaulay would get a bigger reaction than Kieran. Like
Macaulay got a pretty big reaction here.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure. Just like he did on Netflix.
The debut, wasn't he there for? Got a very, very big response there. Mm-hmm. Cody Rhodes is out. Tons of heat for John Cena when his name is brought up. And Cody, first of all, notes, why am I here? Because pretty much he's got to say, I've pretty much got to do the exact same promo I did on Friday, but change things up. We have no distance to proceed with until John shows up. So there's also
completely like no acknowledgement nor even like excuse being made for like a Raw and a SmackDown talent just being on whatever either show.
Well, wait, you missed it. This is the Cathedral.
The Cathedral.
Yes.
Thus, it becomes sort everyone of like is welcome. Neutral ground.
Yeah. This religion that is whatever. WWE. It doesn't discriminate. Okay.
Fine.
Based on your brand loyalty.
Doesn't matter. Yep.
He says that Cena will be on Monday. On Raw next Monday, in Belgium. So if any of you fans in New York want to join us, you can get on a flight. He says that Cena's not here tonight, even though he won the U.S. title in this arena, and this is where he returned from injury at the Royal Rumble. He does not begrudge John Cena having a part-time schedule, because even John Cena part-time is better than some full-time. And with this, we went from a pretty antagonistic crowd toward John Cena to a very divided, let's go Cena, Cena sucks chant. And I honestly did not think we would be getting this way. I thought this was going to be pretty just a seamless rejection of John, not rejection of John Cena, but a crowd that was going to, much like the New Day. It's like, okay, we know that we are to boo them. But here it was Cody kind of having to battle with this crowd throughout the promo. And it will be interesting to watch, because I think John Cena will be very entertaining as a heel. And that might also be an obstacle to have to overcome, because it's going to be a fresh character and we might get some of these reactions. He criticizes John Cena's post on X, which I don't know. X was down most of the day, so I don't even know what this was. That Cena wrote that doing what needs to be done, Cody calls Cena a moron, and that Cena was best for business. But let me tell you something. There are nearly 17,000 people here, and my God, you have not heard Cole and Pat jump over Cody faster than to correct him here with, oh, it's over 20. And that the business has changed. Cena will not win his 17th title, and he gets to be the one to beat John Cena, ending his dream, because I'm the captain now. And later there was a graphic promoting Cena for the next three Raws, in Brussels next week, Glasgow in 2 weeks, and then London, England on the third week of this European swing.
Yeah. In terms of a promo, I thought Friday was, I think, much more interesting and much more engaging.
Excuse me. What more can you say after Friday's speech? Like, you need some kind of retort. Like, you made your big statement in response to the turn, and then you had to come back here and pretty much make it very clear. I'm going to reiterate my points from Friday. Yeah. I mean, listen, it's Cody Rhodes. You put him
there's
on.
There's a lot
for
of
a
TV
segment.
To fill. He needed to make an appearance on a big show. I get it. But I thought most interesting was what you pointed out in the dueling Cena chant that. You know, certainly I think everybody is in favor of this decision of, like, you know, Cena going in as a heel against a Cody Rhodes. But I think tonight showed maybe the first potential glimpse of a side effect of all of that being Cena looking incredibly cool coming out of it all, and being combined with, like, the idea that he's a limited special attraction, combined with the fact that he's going for his record-breaking 17th championship win, combined with the fact that it'll be his last WrestleMania, all of these things that were factors working for his babyface run, coupled with the fact that he's fresh and actually, like, cooler now as a heel, potentially, these are things that are all going to be stacked against Cody Rhodes and the success of a potential Cody Rhodes babyface reaction at WrestleMania. And granted, this is New York, and New York crowds are definitely one of those crowds that think for themselves. But I think a WrestleMania crowd could very much be that type of crowd too. So that, I think, remains a pretty interesting element of all of this. Creative can be done to, I think, like, you know, push the babyface momentum towards Cody, of course. But is that something they'll want to fight, or will they just kind of be happy to take any reaction?
There's also the thought, like, thinking afterward, was with all of those reasons you listed, is that sort of an argument against going initially with, like, a dual babyface lead up to WrestleMania, that just by default, it's a babyface story for John Cena, who is now seen as, like, the legendary figure that is wrapping it up this year. Like, they've been very, as much as Cody has been this excellent babyface, they were very careful in the Kevin Owens feud about, you know, doing certain angles, like, outside of the arena, like, not wanting to give any kind of, like, cool heel vibes to any of his opponents. And with Cena, like, you would have been running that risk that the audience would have chosen its babyface in that scenario, and that it probably would have been Cena. And it still could end up like that. Mm-hmm. That is going to be something to contend with.
Just the idea of Cena going for a record-breaking championship win, I think, like, any crowd who sees that the potential live will want to see Cena win. So how are they going to counter that, or will they simply be running with it? Could we end up with a scenario where, coming out of a John Cena heel turn, crowds will actually be booing Cody Rhodes and cheering John Cena in the match itself?
Maybe
how crazy.
Maybe what they have up their sleeve is Ric Flair coming out with the title, the official title history, and he's going to reveal that 17 is a bullshit number. And John Cena, you've won nothing. You've set no record. You've got to stick around for much longer. Amanda Serrano was showing very noteworthy because Netflix announced over the past week they're doing their second boxing event in July with the rematch between Serrano and Katie Taylor without a Jake Paul on top. So they're going with the women in the main event slot. That tells me like a big commitment just to like those two, which generated it. Like, granted, it was off the publicity of Tyson and Paul, but like those two were the big story of like, this was your excellent fight you got. And a lot of people saw that fight and they're putting them into the big main event spot this July. So that's going to be an interesting one to see how they, what kind of audience is tuning in for what is more of a traditional, like just good boxing fight as opposed to a circus attraction.
And just thinking, I guess, about like the sort of TKO of it all, like how much of a candidate do you think Netflix may be for this new TKO Saudi project?
It's weird because they're very much in the Jake Paul business, which TKO and like Turki Alashik are not. There's a lot of interesting dynamics. And I should mention that John Nash, who is a great reporter, he's going to join Brandon Thurston and I. We're going to have a much deeper discussion on the whole TKO boxing story this Wednesday on that show. Raquel Rodriguez with Dominic and Liv against Bayley, a match that went 11 minutes. And man, this one, the crowd was ready for the steel cage match is what I can say. Not that this was a bad match, but there was not a whole lot of heat in the Jey Uso match either. Like once it actually began, big for the entrance, less so for the match. But in this one, Raquel stops a sunset bomb and works over Bayley pretty much throughout the whole commercial break. Bayley fights back with an elbow off the top. The rose plant is stopped. And then Liv grabs Bayley and Bayley manages to knock Dominic off the apron. A dive gets caught and Raquel slams her onto the desk. Bayley beats the count, but in entering the ring gets nailed with a running boot and Tahana bomb. Raquel wins in 11 minutes and 6 seconds, and it sets up Raquel getting the next shot against Lyra Valkyria for the women's intercontinental title.
I thought the match was okay. Raquel winning via shenanigans feels pretty standard fare here, and I kind of understand it's the standard thing you do with a Judgment Day member, but I also feel like Raquel, despite being like one of the bigger people in the actual division, she is sorely lacking credibility. You know, nobody, like, she could beat Lyra, of course, for the championship, but I mean, I wouldn't say she's over at all. And I wouldn't even say the match is nearly that interesting, with or without a championship. Meanwhile, at the same time, like, I don't know if they consider Raquel even a priority, and I judge that by like the lack of character development they've given her. She basically is an accessory to Liv Morgan without much sort of like identity of her own. And it could either just be a big win for Lyra Valkyria that they'll want to give her, or they could do a title change, which I guess is entirely possible, but I personally just don't see that much interest either way.
Yeah, they have not announced when this match will take place, and this is with the possibility we could get a big Judgment Day angle on next week's show with the Balor title challenge with Braun Breaker.
Are they doing Ireland for any of this European tour?
No.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Kathy Kelly interviews Chad Gable, and she's just going with the impression that that was Chad Gable under the mask, but he denies that that was him. That was a fan, and security was terrible. They should have stopped that fan, and Kathy is not buying any of this. When there in the background is the masked luchador being taken out by security, and Chad Gable is redeemed.
Yeah.
This must have been the exact same person that was out there.
Well, now we actually have a mystery. Like, who is the sort of decoy luchador that Chad Gable, that isn't Chad Gable?
I mean, let the speculation begin.
Yeah, we'll see.
Maybe he was arrested. They could certainly have checked his identity.
Yeah, could be.
Io is shown walking backstage for her segment where Dominic is quietly speaking with Ludwig Kaiser to the side. And out comes Io to be interviewed by Michael Cole. And she
Could Ludwig Kaiser be the Judgment Day member?
No, I don't think so.
No?
I don't. That one wouldn't be high on my probability list. Io says that she proved the impossible is possible. And she is over the moon to be champion and going to WrestleMania. Bianca comes out, and Michael Cole asks her, if Rhea would have lost, would she have lost the match if you hadn't been out there last week? And Bianca is not focusing on that. She's focusing on WrestleMania, but Rhea is not. She interrupts and wants to know why Belair was out there and asks if you were scared of facing me, and brings up the issues that Bianca's having with Jade and Naomi. Bianca does not take kindly to this and says Rhea knows that she can't beat Io. So they go face to face, and each of them take turns just dismissing Io by pie facing her. So Io just throws a gasket and slaps both women and proclaims that she is the champion. And I mean, can we just announce that this is a three-way? I guess we are going to await that official announcement, but that's what we have.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. And if the reason that they decided to give Io the championship was to just find a way to justify the three-way, then I think they've done an effective job of it. I mean, I'm somebody who, for my WrestleMania main event, I always prefer a one-on-one grudge. But for this championship, we could, you know, say the match will probably be good either way, whether if it's one-on-one between one of these women or if it's a three-way. But if the goal was to insert Io Sky into this, I think they've done an effective job of it. In this segment alone, they gave us enough presence from Io on the microphone, you know, saying those lines off the top. But I was impressed in the way that they found a way to make her the focal point of this argument between Bianca and Rhea without having Io do a whole lot, you know, just by being in the background and being dismissed, being pie-faced a couple times. They made us want to see Io attack the both of them. So it's kind of ridiculous how Rhea will just kind of get a WrestleMania match coming out of this, but by framing it as Io wanting to prove that she deserves the conversation and she deserves to be spoken about more so than these other two, I can sort of buy it.
Yeah, there is a bit of shoehorning to get everyone into place here. Not the most ideal, I think, like, circumstance for one of your big stars in Rhea Ripley, but it's sort of just like this is a numbers thing and this is where she is best fit. I think it's going to be a great match, and hopefully they can, you know, have some compelling buildup for where we're going with this, because it is bizarre. Like, you watch that excellent segment from SmackDown with Bianca and Naomi, and I'm watching that segment, and it's like, I'm not interested in Io Sky and Bianca Belair. I'm way more interested in whatever comes out of this involving Jade, Naomi, and Bianca. Like, Bianca and Naomi is the big match, and it's almost like Bianca is now in two separate stories leading into WrestleMania. And for all we know, they could do multiple things the way they're building things. Like, that that three-way story has to culminate in something, and Jade and Naomi feels like the least interesting combination without Belair involved.
Feels like they've extinguished that. I mean, I'm sure, they probably have more, but how is Bianca tied to it is, to me, still very much a mystery. You know, can we, at this point, rule out Bianca Belair as an accomplice?
No, and they've made it very clear that Jade has not, like, come back and just embraced Belair. Like, she is very skeptical of Belair, so that's lingering.
Although, like, I don't know if there's anything to be read from Bianca in this particular segment, because she to me felt like pretty standard Bianca Belair babyface here. Like, and I also wonder if, you know, if they do roll in a Jade and Naomi into this, do they risk having too many people involved in this feud, which already has three people in it?
Oh, yeah. That gets very crowded.
I don't know. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Next week, on the road, Cody Rhodes and John Cena under one roof. Penta will face Ludwig in a no-holds-barred match, Jey Uso against Austin Theory, Dakota Kai against Ivy Nile, and Braun Breaker versus Finn Balor for the Intercontinental title. So that sounds like a pretty full show by the current makeup of Raw. Stephanie Baker and Julia were shown in the crowd, and that takes us to Seth Rollins and CM Punk, which occupied the final half hour of Raw for the steel cage match. And Rollins goes after Punk immediately as he enters the ring. And as they are trading slaps and shots, Michael Cole wonders out loud what Freddie Roach thinks about this. I would have loved Freddie Roach to break down the striking of both of these individuals.
I would love for Freddie Roach to break down a CM Punk MMA fight.
That would be something. The GTS is teased early, but Rollins avoids and powerbombs Punk into the fence and then starts grinding his face. And then he hits another buckle bomb, goes for another one, which is countered, and Rollins is sent into the fence, and we get the first of many GTSs that are hit by CM Punk, but he too is down and can't capitalize to go for the pinfall. And at one point, Punk mounts some offense, including several step-up knees, and the door is opened, and he's offering Seth the opportunity to leave if he wants to. And Punk hits a top rope elbow. The crowd chants for one more. He hits three altogether and then climbs to the top of the cage where Rollins meets him. And they battle on the top. And then Seth takes CM Punk and stabs him in the head with a screwdriver and Spanish fly onto the fans in the front row. And this was an awesome double ending as their feet both hit the floor simultaneously.
Yeah, I mean, at that point in a steel cage match, you kind of expected. I did not expect them to drink each other's blood, though, on Netflix.
No. The fact that the screwdriver was lodged in CM Punk's temple during the Spanish fly was a nice added touch.
Crazy.
I thought, as well. Yeah, the New York ending. So, they continue here. Punk gets hit with a superplex back into the ring. Punk then stops a pedigree, hits another GTS, this getting a near fall. Punk goes for another one, but Rollins rolls to an STF. I really like this spot because they call back to Elimination Chamber and how Cena ended up putting CM Punk to sleep. So Rollins tries the same, but this time Punk is able to reverse into the Anaconda Vice, and then he gets raked in the eyes. And then it's Seth hitting the stomp, another delayed cover. So Punk kicks out. He yanks Rollins off the turnbuckle into another GTS, which Rollins kicks out of. Punk is getting frustrated, so Punk relies on his own version of the stomp. Rollins kicks out. Punk then signals for the door, but Rollins demands that you stay here and earn it. So Punk decides, let's go back to Keiji Muto. And there is CM Punk with his version of the Shining Wizard into Seth Rollins and hits goes for a GTS, which is countered. And Rollins hits the GTS, followed by a stomp again. Punk kicks out, and now Rollins is contemplating exiting through the door when there is a stomp off the middle turnbuckle, big roar that you can tell what is happening here as Seth's back is towards the door, and there, back from the dead, is Roman Reigns, who grabs Rollins and yanks him to the floor, thus giving Seth Rollins the win because his feet hit the floor, but Reigns hits Rollins with a Superman punch and spears him on the floor. And Wade, did you catch the new t-shirt that Roman was sporting?
YTC?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Your tribal chief, I'm assuming.
I assume so. And look at this guy to the left who probably just dropped $50 on an OTC shirt. Now he's got to buy the new one for his kid. So Seth Rollins wins. He finally beats CM Punk, but through the complete assistance of Roman Reigns, who has murdered Seth on the floor. And he places Rollins' head onto the steps for retribution from the Royal Rumble when Adam Pearce and all the officials run down to prevent Reigns from doing this. And there, Roman Reigns sees that Paul Heyman has entered the ring and is consoling CM Punk. And Reigns has this look on his face, enters the ring, and proceeds to ram CM Punk into the cage and spears Phil right in the center. And Cole reminds us of the favor that is still owed to CM Punk. And I think we have our Mania direction with Roman, Seth, and CM Punk, and Paul Heyman tied in the midst of all of these dueling dynamics.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I thought the match was great. You know, very well-paced, great near falls. I enjoyed the idea of both men refusing to win by exiting the cage. And I would say, like, how long was the match, Don? Did you time it?
It was 22 and a half minutes.
Like for a pretty lengthy match by Raw standards, I feel like it only got better with time, and they gave this crowd a match that was definitely far above the usual Raw standard and just continued to build in terms of excitement. Again, like the women's program, not my first choice of Mania match involving three people, especially like three people with like so much potential for like their own individual programs, but I thought they found a really good way of making the grudge between the three feel logical. Punk and Rollins are now 1-1 in this particular series. The match didn't result in a definitive end, so that naturally continues. Roman is out for revenge from Seth, of course, and in doing so, cost Punk the match, which already should be enough for Punk to hate Roman, but then now the added element of a custody battle between the wise man maybe just makes things slightly more personal, and how the favor ties into it, I'm very interested to see.
Yeah, I thought the cage match, it was very good. I mean, you can look at like they did a million and one near falls, but the crowd was so into all of these. And I would say like 10 minutes into this match, I was just thinking, my God, how do you follow this cage match from the night before if you are someone that had watched both? But they did, like, this really got over to the audience, and you had the big return of Roman in your back pocket.
I would argue, like, maybe most of this crowd probably didn't watch that cage match. And even if they did, like, it enough time had probably passed.
Well, it had been a solid 24 hours since the bloodletting. But yes, and no blood in this match either for a cage match, which in the Paul mm-hmm. Levesque era is not out of the realm of possibility, but they did not go that direction with this one. And yeah, I think all of your key WrestleMania programs are now pretty much in play, that even if not announced, you kind of know what the direction is for all the main players now.
Can you see this three-way between Punk, Rollins, and Reigns being one of the main events closing night one?
Small chance, yes.
Because I wonder if that's like ultimately some form of favor that Paul, like I don't know how Paul Heyman would allow him to grant that, but I did feel like Paul Punk made some sort of reference of like you know, at the beginning of last week's promo saying that his chances of main eventing WrestleMania aren't over yet. So I wonder if this could actually be one.
Yeah, I just think like this whole elusive WrestleMania main event, that I think that should remain the carrot that's out of grasp for Punk. And that's mm-hmm. That should always be his direction. Like, I almost don't want to see him get it because it's this great prize. And you have like the clock ticking on how many more WrestleManias this guy will get in. That yeah. would seem just to kind of, you're circumventing all of that to just do it for some non-championship deal here with these three. But I mean, if this is on night one,
it's like, going to be the
this
biggest
is
match.
This is the much bigger match than Jey Uso and Gunther, if we're looking at it. And this is not a year where I'm looking at either of the women's title matches as being one of those contenders to close the show unless something really catches fire.
By process of elimination, if we're taking what Levesque said in the press conference at face value, in that you know, it doesn't matter what gender you are, doesn't matter like who, you know, it depends on who which program has the most interest. Well, then this would be the main event of night one.
Yes. Yeah,
assuming it's on night one.
At this juncture, yeah. It is. So there you go. That was Raw. I would say like the show was, I mean, like it really came down to like the final half hour for me. Like there was some good stuff on the undercard, but this really felt like a show that was just sort of everything is in place. And it really kicks off next week with John Cena appearing, where they can start to advance some of this. Because there's a lot of feeling of like some just holding patterns. Like, we have our kind of 4-week plan to lead up to Mania, and we're like 6 or 7 weeks out, and we're not quite there where we're going to be ramping stuff up. And
we're getting some sign of like new programs, like AJ versus Logan Paul, for instance. You know, but
boy, I hope they go down the rabbit hole of topics for those two to get into.
Oh, I
want their worldviews to be really showcased.
I mean, I enjoyed this Raw overall. Maybe I'm more so colored by like the big events that are happening in it. I think there's always some sort of like a buzz attached to a show taking place in MSG. Like, the feeling to me does come across on screen. It felt like maybe a version, maybe a slightly smaller version of like the Netflix debut, but one that I ultimately felt was maybe more enjoyable than the Netflix debut, because this time it didn't feel like they were blowing their load with resolutions to big programs in front of crowds that didn't really appreciate them like they did for the LA show. They did like, you know, like worthwhile build towards WrestleMania, which I thought mostly came across well. Lower on talking segments, higher on in-ring action, and a lot of celebrity cutaways to rappers and people with Netflix programs.
A lot of celebrities, or whatever defines celebrity in 2025, were on display. All right. Well, we're going to say farewell to those on the free feed. If you want more of us, consider jumping on board at postwrestlingcafe.com, where this show continues on as we do this live on Monday, where we are going to be taking your feedback and questions. Also coming up this week, a new edition of Talk, where Wei and I sit down and do just that. That will be dropping on Tuesday. And what a month we have at the Post Wrestling Cafe. In addition to all these XL editions of our regular shows, we've got Talk. We've got Daredevil Born Again coming out weekly. We already have reviews of Dune and Queen of the Ring up. And, of course, the great W.H. Park and Karen Peterson joining Bruce Lord last week on Post Pro Res. All of that can be found at postwrestlingcafe.com. As well, later this month, a book club with myself and Neil Flanagan chatting Queen of the Ring.
Very exciting. Welcome back, John.
And goodbye to everyone else.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts!